Blog Talk Radio.
You may think that it's over, that your life is done.
The best is yet to come.
Don't sweat the challenge, your battle's already won. Listen, y'all. See, God writes the end before the story begins. Oh, he told me to tell you the best
is yet to come.
As the author of your faith, he wrote a provision for you to win. You're a winner, you're a winner, you're a winner.
You ain't seen your best days yet.
You ain't seen your best days yet.
You ain't seen your best days yet.
I don't care what people told you, you ain't seen the
best. You ain't seen your best days.
Oh, well, my brother.
Your best
what you know? Is on the way. I see you eagle, I see you flying high. Ooh, you ain't seen nothing, you ain't seen nothing, you ain't seen nothing. I know you may think that you have, but God told me to tell you, you gotta keep on fighting, keep on praying. You ain't seen nothing. It's gonna come.
that music. We don't have the rights to that song, but I tell you what, it just bores something inside of me, and I just feel, just know the best thing is just haven't happened yet. And we're going to keep on grinding. This is Dr. Loretta D. Smith, the host of Talking Real to You, and we're very excited to be on Marvelous Monday. And we want you to make sure you enjoy while we're here. We're the only father and daughter blog talk radio team in the country, but we have some very special guest experts that's part of the team as well. So just by having that as a name for the show or just a figment of information for you, but we also have to make sure we take care of our special guest expert. I'm very excited about those two individuals that's going to be joining us tonight, and they're on the line, and I do appreciate them joining us. But before we get to that, we want to tell you our call-in number, 347-857-4192, or go to the web link, which is www.blogtalkradio.com/LD Smith Production. You know, I'm getting some calls coming in here, and I just want to make sure I give everybody my attention, but this show is the most important thing. We're going to just talk about plain old life issues tonight. That's what Talking Real to You is all about. Now, let me introduce our special guest expert. I'm going to start off with a young lady that's north of us, but just a little north of us in that place, in that state called Georgia. And she's been with us for a minute, and we appreciate her expertise, Dr. Olivia E. Smith. How are you doing, Doc?
Fine. How are you all?
You're awesome, 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 awesome. All right. Thank you, Doc, for joining us. Now, this is our newest member of the team, and so excited. I'm so excited. My words are just running out and running so fast. We got to slow them down a little bit. I am excited to have this young lady with us. You know, she's been calling into our show, and as I say, I thought she would be a perfect addition to our show. So we offer her the invitation. She accepted, and she hailed from the state of South Carolina, Greenville, South Carolina. She's an educator there, but she also is an expert on life issues. Ms. Scarlett H. Black. Welcome, Ms. Black.
Thank you, Dr. Smith, and to all the callers out there and to the other members of your show. I love it, and you got some challenging topics tonight and issues that are going to be explored.
Oh, yes, and that's what I'm talking about, Keeping It 100. That's the title of this show. Now, if you want to email the show, you can, talkingrealtoyou@gmail.com. Also, tweet the show, that's @talkingrealtoyou. At Lorenza D. Smith, our co-host, you know, she's been kind of working with some things. She's about to have some surgery on her knee very soon, in the next week or so, or next week. And she just kind of get herself ready for the surgery on her knee. So she's taking her medication. She's doing her rehab and doing whatever they require her to do to get ready. And it's my daughter, and that's Lauren D. Smith, and she's our co-host. So she makes that team possible. Father, daughter, blog talk radio team. She's not able to be with us tonight, but, you know, we're going to carry this on because those special experts are going to be able to give it to us. They're going to give us, and we got some topics, as Ms. Black has said, topics that's going to shake some people up. Some people may not be happy with them, but we want you to be a part of it. You can call in 347-857-4192, and if you want to be a part of the show, press 1. And I'll make sure I identify you by calling out the last 4 digits of your phone number. Now, I know some people that call in may not want their number call out, but if they're joining us, and I do appreciate it, I'm going to do my best to try to work around that. But do come on. You don't have to identify yourself, your name. You can just say what part of state or what state you're in, and we'll go from there. So, again, all right, team, we want to kind of get started with Keeping It 100. You know, that's one of the terms that is being used by these people that's supposed to be in the know. I'm going to keep it 100. I'm going to keep it real. You might not like what I say, but I'm going to just let you know how I feel, and I got to share it with you. We're going to start off with that first social issue that I think we need to kind of address, and that is why are black lives in our communities not important? and we want to. We got some examples here, but I want you to share your thoughts in kind of introducing that. Why are the black lives in our community not important? And team, share your thoughts on it.
Ms. Black, you want to go first?
I can. I was just waiting.
Okay.
Good evening again. I think that the lives in our communities are important. It's just that when you see the perceptions on social media, on TV, it looks like as if we do not care and that they are not important, but they really are. All the lives are critical to all of us. And regardless of where you are, what part of the country that you are, it is. But when people see that there is no way out, when you feel like you are being marginalized, when you feel like that you do not count, and that we look at the job situation, the cost of living, our housing situation, we look at all the things that are happening and that's really affecting our communities, this is concern. And sometimes when you feel that way, you just feel like, you know, what else can I do? I'm trying to provide for my family. I'm trying to get an education. And everywhere I turn, you know, you get these roadblocks. And this doesn't mean that you take things into your hand and you act out behaviors such as gun violence or things of this nature. And then when you look at what's happening across the country, nationwide, we have gun laws that we're trying to get sensible gun laws while protecting Second Amendment rights. And at the same time, we still have this big gun lobby called the NRA and things of that nature. So it's concerning to all of us. But I do think that we do feel like our lives matter. They do. But right now, we need help. And we need help from all corners, not only nationally, at the federal government level, but state and local. And then we need to also help ourselves in this type of thing that we're going to have to do. And I'll come back in a moment to try to talk about some of those things if we still have time.
Awesome, awesome. All right, Dr. Smith.
Yes, I agree. I believe the media has set us up to believe that black lives do not matter. And this was something that was presented to us maybe, you know, early on in our life here in the U.S., I'm saying African Americans, black people, Negroes, whomever. You know, through history, you can look at our government, how it was set up, our communities, and there was a overhead, there was something that said your life does not matter, but in the community, our lives mattered because our parents were shaping and molding us. We were in school, we were being shaped and molded, and we were moving into certain positions within the African-American community that did matter, that had weight, that pushed people forward. And I think that continues to happen in communities where someone is going forward and pushing a group of people forward. And we just have to believe that throughout it all, poverty, violence, whatever is in our community, we have to know that we're responsible for going forth as a family, as an individual. And we have to put the tools there so that people will have the tools to move forward.
It's awesome, awesome, man. And I tell you, both of you are hitting it right on the head because I think some things have been, we've been marginalized, as we stated mm-hmm. earlier, and we've been put to the point at some point that we kind of believe that, you know, things are not important. You know, we become something I heard on one of the blog talk radio shows recently, and they said that we become individualized in our community. Because we had so many opportunities, some people managed to get and be able to move from without the neighborhoods and move into other neighborhoods. So we become individual. When you become separate, you will not be able to come together to be successful. Then we start the individuals that don't see a way out say, why does it matter? Nobody cares a thing about us. So we get into situations where we begin to not be able to communicate, not be able to be in the same place with someone with the same color skin that I have, or the same color skin that you have. And the thing about it, if the media perpetuates that and we continue to believe it, you know, I was thinking about something that I'm going to kind of share. I don't know how many people have seen Boys in the Hood. And as Ice Cube is in Boys in the Hood, and, you know, you got that gang violence going on in Compton out there, and he was saying something about when his brother got killed. You know, he was talking about we're seeing all these helicopters flying around in the community, and he would say, I see nothing in the newspaper or the news about my brother getting killed. And he just said something simple like this, you know, they don't know or they don't care, or something like that. Either they don't care, they don't know, and you know what? It's either that that point has been marginalized, they don't care, because as long as we're not crossing over and genociding them in any sense, and I'm talking about the majority, to them it really don't matter. And the thing about it, the only way we can correct that as a culture, we have to decide that we're going to do that. We have all the avenues and all the possibilities to do it, but we also must address, are we going to be in our community? Everybody going to be individualized where we go into our house, we close our door, we got burglar bars, we got alarm system, and we come out, we go to work, we don't ever communicate with our neighbors, we don't talk anymore, and eventually everybody become, you know, to the point where they don't even know the neighbors, they don't even know the people in the community. And we get out in the street and we're afraid of another person that has same color skin that we have because of whatever part of time they come from. Now, I want you to add into this, add your thoughts to it. 347-857-4192. All right, team, you can add some more thought to that.
I also think that we have to stop waiting for someone to do it for us. We're going to have to start taking it by our own hands. If that means one block at a time, one neighborhood at a time, this is what we have to do. And we have to make that effort. One person can make a difference. It has to start somewhere. But instead of sitting back and waiting for folks to come in and help and do this, and we can see what's happening nationwide, and I keep going back to that, because when you're talking about cutting millions of dollars out of budgets that affect low-income, poor people, children, in our neighborhoods and just the community as a whole, and the money is going to the top 1% in this country, but it's going there because it's on the backs of all of the rest of us. And so we can no longer just look towards the government and states and local communities to help. We're going to have to start being our own resources and start, if it talks to one person, one person to person, group to group, neighborhood to neighborhood, then this is what we're going to have to do.
That's great, great, because
I agree with that. We have to go back. We have to go back to some of the ways that we learned years ago, you know, in terms of the teachings that took place, even in the church. You know, I was a reader, but I learned more how to read in the church because I had someone to encourage me. Is that right, Dr. Smith?
That's correct, Dr. Smith.
And so there was somebody in the church encouraging me to read. And so for the most part, that's what I did. I read, I walked to the library with a friend of mine, we read books. But there was, what I'm trying to say is there was somebody who was encouraging us, even in the non-traditional sense, where we were being educated in the school but also in the church. And somebody was encouraging us to go forth and do this. And couldn't understand it all at that time, but I think we have to go back to that. Instead of rushing out of the door, we have to be able to give back and to show young people how to go forth. Because you can go so far, and then you'll be out there by yourself without the skills and the know-how to mingle within the group of society or where I need to be.
I think that when groups pop up after tragedies happen, and I'm fully in support of a lot of things that have popped up and speaking collectively together for the ills that affect us. But even with that, we shouldn't have to wait till tragedies happen. We should be proactive and get ahead of a lot of these things and not wait till something happens. Then we get angry and then we want to march and then we want to do all these things. We need to be proactive and make our voices heard and known and really get behind trying to resolve some of these gun issues in this country that is infesting our neighborhoods and things of this nature. So I think that we need to be more proactive rather than reactive to a lot of situations.
I agree, because with NRA, gun control, the incident that happened in Florida where those young people rallied together to have their voices heard and to be known, they're still working on the issues of gun control and voicing their concerns. But even after these major tragedies in our school systems, we still do not have a plan of action.
Right.
To protect the children, even in the school system, and the teachers as well. But we do not have anything in place to support that. And in Georgia, I believe when there was some support, I'm sorry, there was kind of like a fight between Delta Airline pulling away from NRA and providing them certain travel specialties and discounts. Well, then the person that supported NRA, ironically, was not selected as the political Republican candidate in Georgia. I was shocked. I was really shocked because I just knew this man who had been the lieutenant governor would be the candidate for the Republican Party. He was not. But just the same, I am interested to see what the end would be, because where do we go if we don't start with the NRA? There is nothing in place. Nothing
in
place.
And I think until we get these corporations on board, because we spend a lot of money in a lot of corporate arenas, and until we get these corporations on board to get their voices heard, because in this country, money talks. And when these corporations, such as Delta, and some of these people start speaking up and pressure being put on folks to really come and get behind some of these efforts, we'll see a change. But we have to let our voices be heard, and we have to be proactive and not react.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we have to vote.
And we have to vote.
And that's where we are. And we need to make sure we keep in mind that a couple of things are very important that's been said by both our experts, is that one of the things is that we're going to have to come together, first of all, and have a plan of action. You know, it's amazing. Everything we talk about, and we said making sure we have a plan of action. Even if you're doing a job, you want a textile, a manufacturing, that's a plan of action. What you do, how you got to do it with the team. In the educational system, you have a plan of action. In our organization, we have a plan of action. I think one of the things we're having here, and it's just my only thought in regards to coming up with solutions and being proactive, is that we come up with it, and if it's not coming from the right person, that becomes a problem, and everybody don't want to hear from that person. So what they do, they hear what you have to say. They even vote, even the organization, and we know we're part of organization. But that don't mean it's going to be followed through. And I think in our society, in our culture, that's what's happening. So we become more reactionary than being proactive, because we don't have a plan that's going to keep us going something to sustain for a while, because what we're dealing with in our community, you know, we need to have a plan of action that's going to sustain life. You know, I use for example, because I was put in that situation, and I know we just talked about it, Dr. Smith was talking about Jacksonville, but that last one, I was sitting in the stadium when this happened. And we're talking about, and it's a why this, you know, because these were two African-American high schools participating in the sport, the young people out there doing something, which bring them together. That's what we want to do, come together. And that plan of action, by putting that together, brought all the schools together and those two particular schools that night. But sitting up in that stadium, and all of a sudden you hear gunfire inside the stadium. Two shots, and everybody is stunned. Like, what the world is going on here? And then all of a sudden you hear three more shots, and you know what that happened, what happened then. Everybody just took out running. I saw children being ran over. And it was just whoever did that. So this topic came up, that the incident I brought up and want to talk about it, because we're putting a lot of people's lives in jeopardy. And 99% of the people in the stadium was African American. The firing of the gun was done because they eventually caught the two young men, was African American. So we have to take and have a plan put in place and then stick with the plan. I think that's one of the biggest things. We come up with plans, but we don't stick with the plan. I applaud the down in Florida, Parkland, Florida, when I was down there. I stayed across what they call the turnpike. Parkland was on the other side of where I used to stay from. You know, I was on one side. I would say I was on the east side. They was on the west side. And nice neighborhood and everything. Those young people got it and started marching and going it. But the masses figured it wasn't going to last long. But you know what? They're still hanging in there. We have to get everybody to understand that. So we just got to have a plan of action and stick to that plan of action. And we have to have all organizations, all entities in this society to be a part of it. Because everybody can
help.
Well,
it's at the point now we have to have all hands on deck. All hands on deck.
And so we don't have time to be, we don't have time to do anything else, but everybody, you know, I say, you know, we have some of the greatest institutions within our community, you know, in our community. And sometimes we can't get together to simply carry a plan of action out. We spend more time talking about the problem. We react to the problem. We march. But some of the problems can be avoided. Because as an educator, and Mrs. Black, she knows, as an educator, we see so much going on in our school system that these young people, and we know it's at home. We know it starts at home. But the point is, it's there, but they're bringing it to school, and they're bringing it to the streets, and they're bringing it out there. And it's like, I don't have nowhere to go. You know, you have nothing out there for me. I don't have no chance of success. So the bottom line is having a plan of action, but it's going to take everybody to be a part of, as it's been stated. Any other thoughts on that?
Well, you know,
I just think that, you know, more and more as these budget cuts take effect, because we're, again, and every time I call in, I'm talking about this top 1%, mm-hmm. and on the backs of everybody else, where we're, you know, we should be involved, and our voices need to be just as loud and demanding as others when it comes to these types of issues. But we have to do our homework. We have to do our research. We have to read. We have to really delve into what's happening, because when you look up, it's too late. We have to be aware. And I just need to say this, that sometimes I think we're not as aware as we should be. And all voices, I feel like, matter. It shouldn't be just whom we deem as the heads or leadership or whatever. We all count, and we all have a voice in this thing called democracy, and to make sure that our institutions aren't destroyed. But right now we're seeing a decay. We're seeing a decline. And we need mental health facilities in our communities where they're close, where you don't have to worry about trying to get transportation or a bus or whatever across town or another neighborhood to go and get these facilities. We need all kind of things to really job training, areas where you can go and use computers and start trying to close this digital gap, the digital divide and global divide, because this is a global society. And it's just so much, but you need also the resources and the money, provide the resources to make these things happen. And if this is going to continue to be a cuss to us, then we're going to have to find our way to be proactive about these things.
Yeah, I agree, because the resource, we see more and more the systematic problem of racism, and also funding or resources that are allocated are not reaching our endangered communities or just communities in general. It's going to the top where those kids are already deemed for success. The Parkland students can march and they have a strong voice because they have strong resources to support what they are doing. Am I not right that this is supposed to
You're
be
right.
a predominant?
You're right.
Class?
And they have their parents. The parents also are affluent and can do that. What I liked about what the Parkland students did, even though they have these resources and they are from affluent backgrounds for the most part, they didn't just leave it there. They did spread across the country and pull children and young people in from Chicago and all these other areas to be a part of their crusade to change the gun laws in this country. And I thought that was admirable on their part.
Yes, because I believe they are thinking, as you say, globally, and not just a small part of the world where we exist, but that students, children exist everywhere, regardless of color or creed, and they let that be known. However, are they receiving any support from the White House?
Nope.
And they're still marching to have their voices heard up in
the seat. And they have to keep on marching. And the thing about it, as they continue, and they have a plan of action that they put together that they know if they get out and get high school students who eventually are our leaders of the future, to get them involved with this, and we can address some of these issues with gun laws, and the White House has to listen. Now, even as stubborn as that person is up in the White House, and some other people up there, I don't think he's the only one stubborn. There's a lot of other people, and they're just all they're concerned is the rich getting richer, and our individuals who are at the label part, a late part, not being able to function unless we hand them something out. That is a sense of just like, you know, we're going to relate it to slavery. If we give you a little bit of, you'd be happy with that, but on the other thing, to excel and try to excel to that level. So young people down there are marching and say, don't just tell me you're going to handle this situation. They're actually getting out, traveling all over the country, sharing their ideas. But we need more individuals, even in communities throughout the South, other parts of the southeastern part of the country. We need other people. You know, it just shouldn't be just them doing it. It should be all the young people joining hands. I know it was a tragedy to all of us. It's not just to them, it's to the whole country. It can happen. As I said, Thursday night, it could happen. And that could have been a tragic situation that we just could not overlook, and we need to do more, and they're doing more. So we lives of black lives are very important, it's been stated. So we have to keep that in mind, but we got to get together, formulate a plan, and stick to that plan and demand the masses to be a part of it, demand that 1% that's sitting back holding all the money, that you're going to have to do something, and you just can't sit there. You know, I don't have all the answers, but we're talking about it. You can add your expertise to it as well. It's 347-857-4192. All right, we're going to move to another subject, and this one is still dealing with Black African Americans. And it said, do African Americans hate each other enough to genocide our culture? Do we hate ourselves enough? I hate the color of our skin. I'm still going back to a little bit where it's important. Now, do we hate ourselves enough not to get together, not to form, because we're going to have to do it. Let's get your thoughts on that.
Well, I don't think that we hate each other. I think we're still understanding the issues of colorism and how that impacts one another in our community and how it has to be dealt with. Because, the problems of being light-skinned, dark-skinned, it starts when we're very young in the African-American community. We start seeing the hierarchy of how certain things are set up for light-skinned people, people with, as they say, good hair, and the children who are dark-skinned. You know, we have to work on that to help build the self-esteem of our children. Because they notice the difference when we treat someone else different because of their color. And more than anything, it impacts Black women because we grow up really dealing with the self-esteem issue and being selected by our classmates to be a part of a group, etc., or the boyfriend, you know, he's my boyfriend, quote unquote, early in elementary school. Who did he choose? You know, that's important. And as women, we look at that. We look at that even through high school as we're invited to the dances at one point when we were invited to dances. I'm removed from high school culture now, so I don't know. But who was selected at the dance? To dance with, and it was always so interesting to watch. As I got older, I better understood what was happening. But that happens. Colorism does affect us, and we have to start focusing on our children and grooming them to know the impact that they make on each other.
I think that We you know, we've heard the history of back during slavery when the lighter-skinned slaves were inside the house and the darker-skinned, you know, were outside in the fields and things of this nature. So that's been a long history with our race as far as, you know, you can go back. And it's unfortunate. And even during Sterling and segregation and self-esteem issues and things of this nature, we remember the research done by Dr. Kenneth Clark with the dolls. And children mm-hmm. were called in to see what doll they would like, and each one would choose the lighter skin or the white doll. So we know that's been an issue for us for as long as any of us can go, you know, can remember going back into the history and just reading about this stuff.
Yes.
It is unfortunate that we still have to deal with this, but when you look at Hollywood, celebrities, you look at the beauty culture, you look at the beauty pageants and things of this nature, you look at your fashion magazines and beauty magazines, what do you see? What is it promoting?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have mm-hmm. others outside of our community, outside of our racial makeup, determining who they deem are pretty, intelligent, and smart based on the color of your skin. So this is something that we've always had to really deal with and navigate, And but as we become more of an inclusive society, and that people are marrying who they choose, who they love, regardless of a race, creed, or color, you know, things are loosening, so to speak, but still, this is an issue that we still have to deal with. I don't think we hate ourselves, but are there some people in our culture who hate themselves as individuals? Yes, you know, people go through depressions. They go through all kinds of things that cause this self-hate. Again, going back to the first question, you know, when you feel like you're being marginalized and you just can't see your way out, sometimes you look in the mirror and you just say, you know, why? You know, why? What's causing this? And some of these things that our culture and our society as a whole deals, presents to us, doesn't help it any.
And we have a caller, and I want to make sure this caller gets an opportunity. And I have you on live now, and those last four digits is 6105. You can join the show right now if you want to just tell us your location, however you want to do it, but if not, just jump into the conversation. Welcome to our show.
Hey, how you doing to Ms. Scarlett and Dr. Smith? This is Ms. Joyner from Chicago. It's good to hear both of y'all voices.
All right.
And I know here, Lorenzo and Olivia. Just want to add my little piece in about you black, do we hate ourselves? I think hate is a strong word, but I don't think it's a hate for us that we have as black people. It's just non-information. And I think Ms. Scarlett hit the nail on the head. When you think about our culture being inundated with someone else's level of what is beauty, what is, you know, the skin tone that is acceptable, you have to remember that we've been inundated with this kind of mis-messaging for years. And Ms. Scarlett referenced a study from one of the professors, and I would encourage anybody to check out Dr. Joy DeGore's post-traumatic slave syndrome and, you know, her research, evidence-based research, which is what most people lean to, along with is what you're saying the truth. Well, here it is, evidence-based. Most of us are still suffering from post-traumatic slave syndrome. People don't like to acknowledge it, you know. Others will say, non-blacks will say, oh, just let it go. Slavery is over with. It's gone past, but it's not. The result of it, the trauma of it, still exists generations on. And, you know, unfortunately, the mentality is true. Light skin, dark skin, you know, it's done in every walk of society, you know. You just think about a name on an application. You know, I could go in for a job. My name is, you know, Kim. Okay, non-threatening, but go in there. My name is Shaquita. Somebody already has a stereotype associated with it. And then don't let me physically come in with locks in my head. You know, all of those things are played out day in and day out. So much so to schools are even now banning you know, our young babies going into the school with locks and you know, telling our kids that all hair has to be low cut and clean shaven. You know, who are the people that are setting these standards? And I think until we get to a place, in order for us to get to a place, we have to understand the history. So you're right, some homework has to be done, some education has to take place, and it has to start in the family and then continue out for us to even realize how damaged we have been as a people. Now, I'm not saying wallow in it, but acknowledge it, understand it, and then there you go with the plan of action, as your conversation was for the first question. It has to be a plan of action. It has to start, unfortunately, right there in the home and then move out forward. Now, you know, families are not going to have everything that you need, but through networking and through all the different partnerships that you have in Georgia, whether it is in Chicago or throughout the states, we have got to take a look at saying, how do we help pull up, assist our people? Because the fact of the matter is, and I speak from a law enforcement standpoint when I say this, there is nobody, and I know I'm using incorrect English, ain't nobody going to save us but us. There's nobody that's going to save us. And if we're waiting for somebody to charge in on a white horse, you know,
amen.
Get on a level playing field with y'all, is just not going to happen. And if we keep making the mistake of, just like you said, becoming so, wanting to assimilate so much with everybody's culture except for our own, you know, I got my big house, I got my job, I got my car, I'm good. Shit, you get yours, forgive language. But if we keep with that mentality, then we'll be talking about this same subject 20 years from now. And it's just the truth.
That
I surely agree.
It is the truth.
I think you got to
hear
that.
And that's the point, I'm making. You know, we can't wait for someone to come in to try to save us. We got to start saving ourselves because, folks, if we don't vote and we don't turn some things around, it's not going to get any better.
No. And I work with I'm a community policing sergeant here in the city of Chicago. As I said, I've been a police officer since 1988. I am so looking forward to retirement, but even in the midst of posturing myself for the retirement, I know that that's the end of Act One. I know I got another act to do, you know, and without that uniform on, it allows me to be more aggressive in the work with my people, which I eat, sleep, and drink. You know, I just was being told that the day that I'm afraid to be amongst my people is the day I really need to hang my guns up. It's the day I really need to throw my hands up and say, you know, this is all for naught. We don't hate, but we are so afraid of our people. And when you stop and ask yourself why, most of the time people can't even generate or give you a good response to it. You know, you see everything in every walk of life you go to, black is always referred to as something negative. You know, you watch people watch along the street. We do it with the young people that we work with. You know, you take them down Michigan Avenue, you know, and they dress the way they dress, the hip-hop flavor, the Timberland boots, pants kind of sagging and all of this, and go up to somebody and try to ask for directions. People walk all wide berth around them. We go into the building and you're looking into, and we say, okay, put on this suit and tie, pull your pants up, and people are happy to just literally jump in my car. I'll take you where I'm going. So a lot of it is about the presentation and knowing, you know, how to present. You know, and knowing how to present doesn't mean that you stop being black. It's simple. You've got to figure out how to navigate this world because, you know, some of the things that we may do in the confines of our own neighborhood and our own community just don't work in corporate America.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That's awesome. I'm telling you, she's hit it on the spot. We do appreciate you joining us, and the conversation is just exciting. You can join us, too, 347-857-4192. Call in. Share your thoughts on it. You know, we got an outstanding topic. You know, we always have a lot of topics that we talk about, but when we get one that we just want to put our teeth into it and just work with it. And just to kind of go back, if I can just kind of relate to what Podesta was saying in regards to when people talk about slavery or talk about anything, people of other culture or other the majority race always say, well, you ought to just forget about that. You can't forget about something that you went through 200 and 300 years of. And you know it had to have an effect on individuals now. Yes, we have some things, you know, that are better now. We got better homes, we got nice jobs, we got cars, and we got all that. But we still have something that they still hold on to that keeps us separated from them, whether it's the railroad tracks separating one neighborhood from another neighborhood. It could be nice homes on both sides, but they have something to separate us from being there. But we think we arrived. So all these kind of things is implanted. It's been drilled. We lived it, and our people lived it, but we just can't just forget about it just because now we can buy that Lexus, that Mercedes, or buy that $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 home. We got the nice job. You know, another thing, they give a nice job to one of us. Instead of us reaching back and having a solution to help somebody back in, a young man that might be sagging pants, tell him to put him up and pull him up and get dressed and look nice and No, we ain't gonna do that. We're gonna pull that ladder up and we're gonna keep on moving on and leave you down there so you can be in the like crabs in a barrel. Stay down there. Don't come up here because they don't need but one of us up here that arrived. So that's one of the things.
And when you do get in those positions where you can reach back and bring others with you, the others that you bring with you need to appreciate what you did for them and continue to reach back for them to bring others with us. Sometimes we forget, and we have very short memories. Everyone up there in that Congress was not born. They weren't born with silver spoons in their mouths. Everyone in this current administration, the previous administrations, were not born with silver spoons in their mouths. Some of the ones that, including the HUD secretary, who was a neurosurgeon, that I'm not going to call names, but we know who I'm talking about, really terrible poverty. You forget.
Yep.
You forget, and it hasn't been that long ago. When you're talking about being 50 or 60-some years old, that's not a long time in the annals of history that you forget from whence you've come. Have gratitude. Appreciate what was done for you to get there. And don't turn your back on the others who are trying to get there. And then when they help you get there, appreciate what they did. And don't think that you did it all by yourself, because you didn't do it all by yourself.
Right.
And there's something called God who helped get it in place for you to get there.
It's so crazy. What's so sad about it is that sometimes we act, just like to your point, we act like that if I tell you how I did something. I remember a girl asking me, how'd you buy your first piece of property? I was so happy to tell her, because another female black had told me I was in the Air Force Reserve. And I sat around this girl, I never forget, her name was Gloria Christ. And I said, man, I wish I could own some property, but I know you got to be rich. Mind you, I had to be about 22, 23 years old. I'm making a statement like that because why? I don't know. My parents were from Mount Zion, Mississippi, Chula. They didn't sit down and talk to us about finances or anything like that. Whatever we found out on our own or through the type of conversation that I'm having with this girl. And she looked at me and she said, you really think you have to be rich to own property? And I was like, yeah, you know, again, I'm raised up in the projects, Robert Taylor Home. And she said, what are you doing after work? I said, catching a ride home with these guys. She said, well, I'll take you home. She said, we'll make a stop by my house first. She took me to the west side of Chicago, Warren Boulevard. If you know anything about Chicago now, it sits almost in the heart of the United Center. Gloria owned three lots right there. And she told me, this did not take me being rich. This girl walked me through the process of how to own income property or how to own my own home. I was flowing for no other reason than to share what somebody has shared to her. And I never stop telling people that when I hear them make those kind of statements. It don't take much. I can walk you through. Hey, look, this is how much I made. This is how much I paid in taxes. This is how much I put down. Here, it don't take a lot. But a lot of times we think that if we tell somebody something, how I got something, then mine is taken away. No, it's enough shine for all of us. This sun shines over the whole world. It's enough for all of us.
Well, I call it mentoring. I call it mentoring. You know, whether it's buying property, whether it's trying to get ahead in a business or a career or whatever, I call it mentoring. And that's what we seem to not want to do a lot of, you know. If it's in our social circles or our little group, yeah, we'll sit around and talk about that. But when it comes to others outside those circles, we are reluctant, or we just feel like, you know, if they get ahead of me, you know.
Yes.
I have a cousin that used to say, we really had a number done on us throughout our generation as a people. And the tenets of what happened continue, that strand, that thread from way back then, from the fields, from coming over, and everything that we've been through, it still runs through us today. And until we get to a point where we've got to come together, we must help each other, and we've got to stop the things that keep us from getting there. And again, waiting on for someone else to do it for us, it's going to continue.
And I tell you, now, if you want to be a part of this conversation, you can call in 347-857-4192. I'm just so excited. You may have heard my hand clap. I just hear some real positive things going on here. And, you know, we have an answer. We really know what we need to do. Sometimes it's just putting our heads together and just working this plan out, and that plan of action, then implementing that plan of action. Then one other part that I think we forget. We have to have benchmarks in there to check and see where we are, so when we get through, we can sit down and write down what the conclusion of what was the plan and what would be a solution that can help somebody in the future. I think that's where we're missing. We just talk a good game a lot of time. I said it in the organization, several organizations I'm in. I go to the meeting, they talk a good game. When we get out, nothing's done. Come back the next meeting, you're doing the same thing. Come back and talk about the same thing. And I'm like, we're not going anywhere. So we're not able to do what we need to do, you know. And if we have a opportunity to help somebody young, I have several people call me all the time because I'm a retired educator. And they always call me and ask me about this what happened in regards to this case or what happened with personnel. Matter of fact, my son called me Friday night, asked me about a situation where he works. And, you know, I'm like, that's mentoring right there. Whatever knowledge I have, I have no problem with sharing it with individuals, because if they're calling you, they know you have put that many years, and, you know, I'm joked about this. I'm always saying 35.8 years. And I say in 35.8 years, I've seen a lot happen. So when I share it with them in regards to personnel issues, administration, teaching, children, all this encounter, you know, I try to share it because that's what it's all about. We must mentor our young. We must mentor our old, must mentor our middle class or whatever else. You know, everybody's talking about people of wisdom. You know, they say they know everything. Yeah, but sometimes they need help too. People, young people need help. I need help. So we have to be there to help one another. We got to reach back, you know, and put ourselves together and say, we will overcome. Not we shall overcome. We will overcome.
But we
that's
will.
That's what we have to do. Yeah, we will overcome.
Overcome.
So it's been, you know, we had a, and I don't want to run out on you, but we always have a log of some exciting topics. But, you know, we get to talking and we get to some of those topics and stay on those topics and we move on and time go by. And we're down really to about 2 or 3 minutes within the time of our hour. I know it's so exciting, we don't want to leave, but we'll come back. We'll take these topics and we'll talk about the ones we didn't get to at next time, which is, and I hate to say it, it's every other Monday, but we'll be coming back and sharing the thoughts. I might just get some discussion with my team that might want to come back next Monday. But next Monday is what? Labor Day. Isn't that correct? And I understand
That's
we all
it.
Want to enjoy Labor Day. It's Labor Day, correct? So we want to enjoy that. But
right.
But each and every one of you all, you know, I want you all to be with my team to kind of close out, and get the way you feel comfortable with. And I want to thank Modessa for joining us out of Chicago, and she can share some thoughts before she leaves as well.
Well, it was really great. I look forward to your next topic of conversation. You keep up the good work, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming on, Modessa. I hope you'll be on another show, and I hope we can talk more about what we really don't want to talk about, and that's the violence that's taking place in our country and the mass shootings.
Absolutely.
We recently experienced gunfire in Montgomery, Alabama at a high school football game, and there were some other states that stated the same on the news. So I'm hoping that at some point we can have some discussion where you'll be able to give some insight into that topic.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Well, this has been another awesome show. I have absolutely loved it. Thank you for the gracious invitation to become a part of your team on this, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. But let me just close out by saying this. Dr. Smith, whether you know it or not, this show is mentoring. Real talk. Sometimes we don't want to hear things that are the truth, and we run away from that. We've heard the former mayor of New York go on national TV saying the truth is not truth. Mm. And that disturbed me, because when truth starts becoming truth, then what's left? So I think that you're doing a great service with this radio blog, with you and your daughter, the only father and daughter radio blog that I know of in the country. So I think it's just another avenue that's been provided to reach people out there. And if you just reach one, that's one that's been reached. And hopefully others will also be reached as we go along.
Awesome.
Awesome. And I do appreciate Dr. Smith, Ms. Black, as well as Ms. Modesta, for calling in and sharing your thoughts here, as well as individuals who, you know, on Twitter, they was tweeting me and they was just emailing me all of these thoughts. But we're going to come back. And I'll say in 2 weeks, though, we want you to enjoy Labor Day, because it got the name because it's a day that you relax from labor. So it's a celebration of being employed and having a chance to rest and enjoy your family. You know, I always tell everybody, you know, when I want to leave this show, you know, one of my co-hosts on the Wednesday night show, take the night and don't let the night take you, and that's Tony Stallworth. But besides that, hashtag keep on grinding, hashtag the Smith way. And I said always, and everybody always look at me and said, what are you talking about? I always tell everybody, I love you, and ain't a thing you can do about it. Have an awesome night, and we look forward to you joining our show on, actually, Wednesday night, Talking Sports Plus at 8 o'clock Central Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio, and on Friday, Ballin' with the Doc, and that's me. I host that. Call me at 4 o'clock Central Standard Time, 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and let's share some thoughts about sports. Both of those shows on Wednesday and Friday is about sports, the hottest topic. So have an awesome night, and we will.
You may think that it's over, that your life is done.
Right.
Oh, my. Don't sweat the challenge. Your battle's already won. Listen, y'all. See, God writes the end before the story begins. Oh, he told me to tell you the best
is yet to come.
As the author of your faith, he wrote a provision for you to win. You're a winner, you're a winner, you're a winner.
You ain't seen your best days yet.
You ain't seen your best days yet.
You ain't seen your best days yet.
Care what people told to you, ain't true enough.
You ain't seen your best day.
Oh, well,
from negative words. Get away from negative people. Can God speak to you? Is on the way. I see you eagle, I see you flying high. Ooh, you ain't seen nothing, you ain't seen nothing, you ain't seen nothing. I know you may think that you have, but God told me to tell you, you gotta keep on fighting, keep on praying. You ain't seen nothing. Thank you.